Well, Sean, we got playoff races in the Western Conference that are very interesting. We got seeding races in the Eastern Conference, a battle for first place. You got debuts going on, the number one pick, the number two pick. Needless to say, since the last time we recorded a podcast, there's a lot going on in the NHL.
Dan, it seems like every night it's like playoff hockey. It's amazing.
Oh, please.
Every night there's a game that's just like playoff hockey, and it's awesome to watch.
It is awesome to watch. It's not playoff hockey. It's getting close.
Tell that to the teams on the bubble. Tell the Nashville Predators and the LA Kings that they're not playing playoff hockey right now.
I will tell them they're not playing playoff hockey because the playoffs start May 2nd, I believe, and we are recording this episode on April 14th. So, no, we got 18 days into the regular season to go, and we're not playing playoff hockey just yet. But we're going to bring in a guy here, our colleague from Toronto, Mike Zeisberger, who's covered a lot of playoff hockey. Covered a lot of playoff hockey in Toronto, hasn't covered a lot of second round playoff hockey in Toronto, but maybe this year's eyes. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, 18 days till the playoffs. And, you know, I'm glad that Dan straightened that out about the playoffs haven't started. Those coaches that have been saying after the games, man, that was a playoff like game out there. They need to talk to Dan.
They don't know nothing.
Exactly.
Just listen to me here.
But yeah, you know, I mean, everybody in Toronto as there want to be. I mean, the lows get you know, the low when the team is in their lows and their doldrums, the blue and white sky is falling, and when they're doing well, you know, plan the parade route. But you know, guys, for me, it still comes to this. And in the last few weeks, I've been asked on, you know, from various media outlets, who I think is the best matchup for the Leafs. Is it the Tampa Bay Lightning? Is it the Boston Bruins? And you know what? I mean, after a while, you just kind of get numb to that. I will bring up what I always bring up when discussion comes about the Leafs in the playoffs. The last time the Toronto Maple Leafs won a playoff series, there was no salary cap, and we were still using the center ice red line for two-line passes. That would be 2004. So when people ask me, who do you think the Leafs' best matchup is, it's the one where they get up in the morning and look in the mirror. It's got nothing to do about Tampa. It's got nothing to do with Boston. And it's got everything to do with this core of players, Morgan Riley, obviously Mitchell Marner, everybody's hero in town right now, Austin Matthews, and William Nylander. They've had five kicks at the can now, and they've lost in, you know, in their first series every single time, including to a team 2 years ago in a play in Columbus that they were more talented then. And last year, blowing a 3-1 lead in the first round against Montreal, a team that, in my humble opinion, they were more and are more talented then. So that's great. You can go up and talk about line matchups and this and that in terms of potential teams that they have to play. But it's about time that this Toronto Maple Leafs core, when it matters, okay, that they come up and embrace the moment instead of falling short. And remember this too, Dan. I'm not just talking about a whole series. I'm talking about a team that lost two game sevens in a row to Boston, lost a deciding game five to Columbus, and a deciding game seven to Montreal. And the last two were on home ice, although the Columbus one was in the bubble, no fans. But at some point, and it's great that Mitchell Marner's gunning for 100 points, and it's great that Austin Matthews could be the first 60-goal scorer in the National Hockey League since Stamkos in 2011. None of that matters if you don't rise to the occasion when it's all on the line. And that's what 18 years out of the playoffs, that's the opinion that you're going to forge after seeing this over and over again.
I agree with what you said, but I think it's telling that you mentioned the core and you said Morgan Riley first, which I found very humorous considering it's an Austin Matthews team, but you didn't mention a goalie. And that's the problem. You could say that core had five kicks at the can.
Yeah.
Where's the goalie? Where's the goalie in that core, right? Where's the goalie who stopped the bleeding? Where's the goalie who, when they're up huge on Boston in game seven, kicked the game away? the team has some responsibility. So does the goalie. Look, and I think things are breaking right for the Leafs right now. Tampa Bay, not very good at the moment. Can't beat a non-playoff team for the last 3 weeks. Boston, injured. Pasternak's out. He kills the Maple Leafs. You know, Bergeron's been dealing with injuries all year. Their goaltending situation's a little unsettled. Is it going to be Swayman? Is it going to be Ullmark? I think each of those teams who have been nemesis to them are in dire straits and maybe make it a little easier to get out of the first round. But unless the Toronto Maple Leafs figure out what they're doing with their goaltending, they're in trouble.
When you talk about the Bruins and the Lightning, and I've seen that the Lightning have been off their game for sure. And I'm not saying there's a switch on the wall. You just go like that and they'll start up again. But this team has pedigree. They know when it's go time, how to go. And let's not forget one thing about the Lightning. Okay. Yeah. They have the tread, the wear and tear of going back to back to win the Stanley Cup. And those were a lot of games, but for one of those seasons, they hardly had Stamkos at all. And for the other one, they pretty much didn't have Kucherov. So, you know, a couple of those core players haven't had the wear and tear. And I don't mean from an injury standpoint, because obviously those guys were hurt. But in terms of the amount of games accrued that they played, you know, my two keys for Tampa are Vasilevsky and Hedman. Because Hedman, to me, there's nobody in this league that can control the flow of a game, whether it goes fast or it can go slow. He dictates on every shift, or pretty much every shift that he's on, what kind of speed that shift will be played at. And that's the guy, and Vasilevsky too. Those are the two guys that I worry about with wear and tear. But again, whether it's Tampa or Boston, it's the Leafs that have to get over that mental hurdle. And you make a great point about goaltending, Sean, but the fact that Matthews and Marner combined for one goal in seven games against the Montreal Canadiens, as much as you can, you know, the goaltending has to share the blame, you can't have a guy that this year could score 50 goals and a guy that this year looks like he'll get 100 points. You can't have those guys combining for one goal in seven games. You just can't have it if you have aspirations of winning.
So my take on this is I am now of the belief that Austin Matthews is ready to be that guy, and Mitch Marner too. And I trust them as we get into the playoffs.
Okay.
What I don't trust for the Toronto Maple Leafs, this will be my last point on the Leafs, is I don't trust that they can win a 3-2 game. I don't trust that they can win a one goal game where they don't have to score four. And you're not going to win in the playoffs if you have to score four or five every game. So to go back to Sean's point, we can talk all we want about how it's essential that the Leafs get out of the first round this year, that Kyle Dubas, what he said back in September, right? Like things will change or not and all that stuff. If you can't keep the puck out of your net enough, you can't win. And that's the problem that the Toronto Maple Leafs are looking at right now and saying, can we do this? And guys, it's a problem that the Florida Panthers are looking at right now and saying, can we do this? For as good as the Florida Panthers have been, and I wrote about it in Super 16 this week, the Panthers, since the beginning of March, lead the league in goals. They lead the league in wins. They lead the league in points and points percentage and shots on goal for game. They're third in shots against per game.
Yeah.
But Sergei Bobrovsky has an .894 save percentage. So yeah, they're winning all these games. Bob's 9-0 in that stretch. That's not going to happen. You can't win with a sub .900 goalie in the playoffs. That's the problem that the Florida Panthers are going to face. That's the problem that the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to face. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like it does come back to exactly what Sean was saying. It comes back to goaltending. I trust Austin Matthews. I trust Mitchell Marner. I trust Morgan Riley. Flip it to Florida. I trust Jonathan Huberdeau now and Barkov and, you know, and Aaron Ekblad if he can get back and that team. I don't trust that they can win a one-goal game where they don't have to score four or five to do it. And that's what Tampa was able to do so well in the last 2 years. That's what you have to do in the playoffs. That's what a team I think like Carolina can do. That's what we know Tampa can do. Boston can do it. Maybe the Penguins can do it, though they've been struggling. We don't know if the Rangers can do it, but I really have no faith that the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Florida Panthers can do it.
You mentioned the Carolina Hurricanes. Who's their goalie?
It's the guy from Toronto.
Yeah. So, but, you know, getting back to your point, I think it rests with Jack Campbell and, you know, his state of mind, his state of health. They're only going to go as far as he takes them. And look at first half of the year, he was an all-star. He was at the all-star game. Then he went on that funk, and we know he, you know what, his confidence is very fragile. And then he got the rib injury, and when he came back, he played very well. And now he's nicked up again. So I think it does come down to Jack Campbell. And in another twist of irony, the two guys that, that the Leafs brought in to shore up their defense, Labushkin from Arizona, who was a kid I didn't know much about, has played way over my expectations. In fact, there was a somebody from an NHL front office at the game the other night, and we were talking about him, and he said he had pressed at the trade deadline to try to get this kid because he thought he was kind of a hidden gem out of Arizona. But more than that, Mark Giordano. Giordano doesn't have to be the Norris Trophy winner of a couple of years ago, but he's kind of been like an offensive lineman. Like sometimes, you know, it's the third period and you're going like, I haven't noticed Giordano much. And that's a good thing. Just like in football, if you don't hear an offensive lineman's name, that means he hasn't screwed up. I actually think this is as good a cachet of Leaf defensemen since I've covered the team. And that's not saying much compared to some of the other teams in the NHL because they really haven't had that standout defense. And I would go as far to say, with no offense to Cabral or McCabe, that Morgan Riley is the best defenseman they've had since maybe Boris Salming. So we're talking decades. But, you know, so you've got that in place too, to your point, Dan, and you trust the forwards. And to Sean's point, gonna all come down to Campbell. But when you look at the goaltending there, at least I think if Bob has a hiccup, I'm more confident in Knight coming in than I am in you know, anybody the Leafs can put in there. And the other thing is the Boston Bruins are going to go into the playoffs with a goaltending tandem that has exactly zero playoff games of experience. So there is a lot of, when we talk about goaltending, I mean, we talked about the Leafs, we talked about the Panthers, and then we talk about the Carolina Hurricanes, who are banking on a goalie who couldn't get past the first round in four tries with the Maple Leafs. So it's fascinating to me how this is all going to play out.
So before we get off of Toronto, let's go individual for a minute, because you wrote a great story today that came out on Auston Matthews and Alexander Ovechkin, who are playing each other tonight. Marquee game. A lot on the line for each team. Look at the Washington Capitals, by the way, chasing down the whole division after we wrote them off as the 8 seed and an easy out. And I don't think they've lost since. So, so they're playing in a huge game that has playoff implications on both, but it's a one-on-one matchup. Every time Ovi's played, we've always talked about the rivalry with Sid. They're different players. Ovi's a goal scorer. Sid scores goals, but drives the play, is an assist guy. These two players are the same player. They live to score goals. Is Auston Matthews the next Ovi? You did the story. You tell me.
I think he has the potential to be. There's two factors here. Number one, not so much this year, but Austin's had a hard time staying healthy for 82 games, which is something that when you look at Ovi's career, I find that remarkable, especially with the fact that Ovi throughout his career has played a physical game. Matthews has incorporated that a bit. It's not as, I don't know, forward or as violent, but at least he's understanding what, because of his big frame, he's able to do. And the second thing is, I mean, when his contract is done, does he stay in Toronto or does he go somewhere else? I mean, there's been all kinds of rumors that he'll end up in Arizona because that's where he's from. Look at it, be great for marketing there. But how long, you know, you got to be careful. You know, the grass isn't always greener. You go somewhere else, you're not sure if you've got a Marner playing with you. You're not sure if you've got a Nylander on your team or a Riley on the power play. And a couple of the guys we talked about, you know, and Nick Backstrom being one of them, has said that about Matthews, is that he's doing great, but he plays with great players. Look, Nick Backstrom and Ovechkin have been together since, you know, pretty much they both came into the league. And that is one thing that Ovi has had, is somebody, you know, a flank man, a wingman, even though he's a center, you know, a Robin to his Batman, whatever metaphor you want to make it. He's always had a good supporting cast around him. And so those are the two things that I think are the main things that are going to be the biggest factors, whether Matthews does become the next Ovechkin. And I mean, we're talking about longevity there. So that's always a wild card, but number one, health, and number two, supporting cast and whether he stays in Toronto. I think those are going to be the two biggest things.
Toronto, to me, Matthews seems like a guy that I don't know him that well, but until he brings a Stanley Cup to Toronto, I don't see him leaving, to be honest with you. That was the thing I kept thinking about with Ovechkin. And then once he did that in Washington, it was like, well, I'm just going to, you know, like the core is still together. We're still here. We're going to keep going for it. But I don't think Matthews wants to leave Toronto.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I mean, he's, you have to remember too, I mean, this is a kid that obviously growing up in Arizona didn't grow up in a kind of an old school hockey background. He did not play U.S. college or, you know, Canadian junior. He played in Switzerland. So even though his handlers tried to get him ready for the spotlight when he got here, I don't think you ever can be if you've never experienced something like that. So I still think that he finds it a little bit awkward to always be in the limelight, but he certainly embraced it more. I just wonder, Dan, that if the opportunity ever arose where he had a chance to go back to his home and help, you know, even further establish the franchise down in Arizona. I mean, there's nothing tangible to say that he would do that, but there have been some hints and you can connect the dots. So to me, I agree with you. I think, like you said, he's on a mission to win a cup here. I just wonder if, and that's a big if, the opportunity ever arose to go home, whether that would be enticing enough to get him to leave.
Look, and I thought the most amazing part, and I've never made this association, and of course it took Barry Trotz to do it. I believe it was Barry Trotz.
Yes, I know.
Comparison to Mario Lemieux.
Yeah.
Like, never even thought about it. And that might be the closest comparison.
In a lot of ways, yes. I just think that Mario was kind of silky smooth the way that he went about it and glided around. When you see Matthews, he reminds me a little bit more of Eric Lindros, the way he plays now. And that was one thing that I always thought, I would watch Matthews and think, you know, if he ever understands his body and understands the fact that with his size and skill, if he goes and puts his head down, from either outside the opposing blue line or at the opposing blue line and goes straight to the net. In most instances, guys, the only way they can stop him is by tackling or doing something that deserves a penalty. He wasn't doing that early in his career. And I've actually talked to Lindros about this, you know, about how this kid could be the ultimate power forward. And Eric said the same thing. You have to, as a player, when you're the size that Eric is or Austin is, understand, have enough confidence that if there's guys between you and the net, you put your head down and you try to go through them or around them, and there's going to be physical contact. Once you have that established in your own head, that's what you're going to do, it opens up a new layer of the type of player you are. So I understand what Barry says. Hey, listen, he knows hockey players better than I, and I understand the comparisons to Mario. But for me, especially with the more direct way that Matthews is playing this year, I see a lot of Eric Lindros in him.
That's fair. And that's pretty good comparison, too. Not a bad guy to get compared to.
No.
All right. So let's go off to we'll put Toronto to the side here. I wanted to cycle back to we were talking about Tampa briefly, and we didn't really dive into this. So they're the two-time defending Stanley Cup champs. And interestingly enough, in our Super 16 this week, they're number seven. I had them in my own personal Super 16 at number 10, the lowest I've ranked them all season. Sean, you had them at 8. Zize, you still had them at 5. Right. So there's obviously, you know, some institutional knowledge that you're just going with at 5. I'm looking at it, and I think, Sean, you're probably the same way and saying, we know how good they can be, but they're struggling right now. And Sean, to your point earlier, when you said they're really struggling against, you know, the better teams, they're 1-9-1 since March 3rd versus teams that have either clinched a playoff spot or could do so, right? Or in position to do so. They're struggling. Andre Vasilevsky is playing a lot. 33 of the last 40 games, he's gotten the start in 33 of the last 40. And I think he's starting against Anaheim tonight, Thursday night, April 14th. So that's 34 out of 41. That's a lot of games played for your goalie. And he's been okay in that stretch. Nothing great. I just wonder so much, you know, two-time Stanley Cup champs. I wonder if we are now starting to see the drop-off. And can this team do it again? Can they pick it back up again, as we've seen? Or if they get down 2-0 in a series, are they going to be like, oh, I don't know if this is the year to do it. We've done it twice. You know, I don't know if this is the year. I don't think that's a championship team. That's not what a championship team does. But I am starting to wonder if the Lightning we know are starting to just fade just that little bit. And you guys know in this league, if you fade just that little bit, you can be out quickly.
Maybe I'm the captain that's going down with the ship and refuse to acknowledge that there's water on the floor of the boat. But I know that I've been watching them. They haven't looked like the Tampa that we know. You know, I just, when I was doing my rankings, and I've seen how poorly they play, but I still have confidence in them. And I still think that they are among the four or five elite teams in this league. I also know that if they're in a funk like this, there's too many guys in that room that know not to panic. And there's a couple of other things. And I mentioned Hedman before. That is the one guy I worry about wear and tear. But two things, and I brought this up before. Number one, if Tampa's likely to play Boston or Toronto in the first round, they will be going, and if Mrazek is hurt, then they will be going up against a team that has, well, in Boston, zero playoff games played by their goaltenders. And against Toronto, 7 games played combined by their goaltenders, assuming Mrazek is still hurt. And that would be Jack Campbell last year. So, you know, even if Vasilevsky is worn down, look at guys, if we have to do our breakdowns and you put a check who has the advantage in goal from those two teams, even if Vasilevsky has been average, you're going to put a tick beside his name. And the second thing is, I think that Tampa and guys are still learning their roles, but I think they brought in enough new guys that are hungry enough to kind of give the rest of the guys spark. I'm thinking of Corey Perry. I mean, after losing to these guys in the final on back-to-back years, how hungry do you think he is to kind of settle that up? Look at a guy like Nick Paul that has come in and has played. I mean, he's played much, much better than I ever thought he would, and gives Tampa that kind of sandpaper that I think maybe they lost a little bit of last summer, but they've regained now. So, I won't be surprised if Tampa has the Stanley Cup hangover and doesn't, you know, if they bow out, let's salute the back-to-back champions for a great run. But like I said, until that happens, I'm going down with the ship, glub, glub.
And I just think there's 6 or 7 guys in that room. When you look at them and you say, I'm tired, they're going to tell you to go scratch. Victor Hedman played the playoffs 1 year on one leg.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Steven Stamkos came back when he shouldn't have been near the ice and scored when they won their first cup. Right? Mm-hmm. You're going to tell Pat Maroon you're tired? Pat Maroon will rip your face off. There's 5 or 6 guys on that team that just drive that bus and say, no, there's no excuses. And you can't, you know, it's kind of like it's kind of like the Mike Keening thing. Like, you can't be at 100% go all the time. Like, you can't tell your team go.
Yeah,
you know, we need to win every game. And I think one of the things that John Cooper's really good at is he understands that, and he doesn't rant and rave, and he doesn't push buttons, and he's not pushing a really veteran team to say you need to show it before the playoffs. Like, we know there is no switch in the locker room. You don't go and the lights go off and the red light goes on and everybody puts their game face on and they go out and they bludgeon teams. Like, that doesn't happen. But there will be a change in the Tampa Bay Lightning when the calendar flips to May, just because of the personality of that team. And if they lose, they're going to lose to a better team. They're not going to lose because they're worn down.
Yeah, I don't expect, you know, something like happened in Columbus 3 years ago, which to a man, the Lightning say that was kind of the wake-up call that pushed them to be where they are. So, yeah, Sean, I agree wholeheartedly. And really quickly, I remember reading 2 or 3 weeks ago where somebody asked John Cooper, asked him about getting home ice advantage or the President's Trophy. So maybe it was last month when it still looked like they were in range. Obviously, Colorado has gone off to the races with that. But, you know, he said at the time, you know what, like, home ice and that's not what we're concentrating on. We're concentrating on being ready for the playoffs. A lot of people forget that last year in the first round, Tampa Bay was the road team against the Florida Panthers. So this is a team that knows how to win no matter where the venue is.
You know what it is? I 100% agree with everything you guys are saying. And I'm the guy who's been saying, like, until they go down, I would pick them, right? Until somebody knocks them off. To me, they're the best, right? And I get that. And I still kind of believe that, but I'm just looking at the facts, you know, and the facts are telling me they're 1-3-2 in their past 6 games. They're 1-9-1 in their past 11 against teams in a playoff chase. Oh, and by the way, they've got to play 5 games in 7 days to close the season and 2 sets of back-to-backs. Their goalies played a lot. This is an interesting time. I just think it's an interesting time. I go back to actually Dave Barr, who does the coaches room for us.
Yep.
He wrote about this, you know, this week, where he wrote about the idea of how coaches who have a team that know they're going to the playoffs prepare that team. And, you know, it's a constant wrestling match in a coach's mind of, like, you know, do you push now because you want your guys to be going come playoff time, or do you reel back because it doesn't really matter at this point, and it doesn't matter if you're playing game one at home or not. I mean, you want it, but again, if you really believe, John Cooper's got an interesting time here because he's got to get this team playing better. You can't roll into the playoffs playing poor hockey and expect to just go. We've talked about that. You want your goalie to be rested, but you want them to be feeling good. You want your best players to be healthy and feeling good, but, you know, not overexerted. And they've got a lot of games in that short window of time. Yep. And do you push to get your guys playing better? Because then on the back end, it could hurt you. They are a team that's in a very interesting position right now, because we know exactly what they can do because they've done it. But can they do it again with the way that they're playing right now? It's a big question. I don't think that there's necessarily, I wouldn't say there's more pressure on them than there is on Toronto or something like that. I mean, the Lightning have won it the past 2 years, but we know what they can be, but can they be it again? That's and how do you get to that point? That's the question.
We talked about the switch and flipping it on and off, and there isn't one, but I'll tell you what, when you have a Stamkos and a Hedman and a Maroon and a Corey Perry standing in the middle of the room talking to a team, those players will listen to whatever comes out of their mouths. And that is the one thing that I think is helping John Cooper, is that he doesn't have to do this alone, because he's got a lot of, he's got, look at the 4 guys that I talked about. I mean, they might as well all be wearing letters, whether they do or don't, because they're almost like assistant coaches to Cooper.
Not only that, they have the Patrick Watt trick. They're going to put 1 Stanley Cup in this ear. They're going to put 1 Stanley Cup in this ear. And they're going to say, I can't hear the noise. And then they're going to look across the ice at the other team. And 5, if not 6 of those teams are going to look at the Tampa Bay Lightning and say, oh boy.
Well, yeah, there's that.
This team, they're killers. And we can't survive unless everything goes perfect. Maybe the Pittsburgh Penguins don't look at him that way because they've won a couple of cups. They got a couple of guys that say, you know what, we're still good. And maybe the Boston Bruins don't look at him that way because they've had some success against them and they're a very veteran team. But I think anybody else in that bracket looks at him. Florida looks at him and goes, well, what'd they do to us last year? Toronto looks at him and says, oh my God, how did we draw this team? Why are we cursed like we are? The Rangers look at him and say, oh boy, we did a lot during the regular season. They're the two-time champs. Like they have that. They have the two Stanley Cups in their years, so they're not listening to anything dumb people like us are saying. And they have this aura and this mystique that wins them one game in the series.
And I'll tell you what, guys, from a local standpoint involving Steven Stamkos, Steven Stamkos is from the area here, from a place called Markham. His dad was friends, longtime friends, with Stamkos's dad, with Joe Bowen, the Hall of Fame broadcaster of the Maple Leafs. He grew up with Joe Bowen's kids. I remember doing a story on Stamkos in his draft year when he was in Sarnia, and I was doing a column in my previous career, and Stephen going, this was, you know, one of the many dark years for the Leafs, and at the time they had a chance with 2 months remaining to finish in the basement, and Stamkos telling me on the phone, hey, I look at the standings every day to see where the Leafs are, because he wanted to be a Leaf. And in fact, Joe Bowen told him at the draft, hey, listen, when anybody calls your name, don't go up until the Leafs, it's the Leafs' turn, and then you can go up. He's obviously didn't mean it, but if anybody, even after two Stanley Cups, is going to have motivation to come into Scotiabank Arena and kick some butt, it's going to be Steven Stamkos. I mean, when he was vying for free, when he was going to become a free agent before he re-signed with Tampa, I mean, the Leafs brought him in. They brought the mayor of Toronto and the president of Canadian Tire in to tell him why she should sign with the Leafs. Yeah. You know, here's your endorsements. Here, you know, you'll be the face of the city. And you know what? I mean, anybody that sees where the guys in Tampa live on the water like they do, I mean, Lake Ontario is nice, guys, but it doesn't hold a jet ski next to where those guys live.
No, there's no question. And the opponent matters for them. It's true. And they've got a lot of guys who've been there, done that. So we'll see. Let's flip it out west, guys, because we haven't touched anything in the West yet. So, and that's, I mean, it's really interesting, especially at the bottom of that playoff race in the Western Conference. And the Los Angeles Kings are in trouble. They are. Look, the Colorado Avalanche just dropped 9 on them. They probably just scored again while we were recording this podcast. The Kings, they have the position now. As we speak, they have 88 points. They are third in that division. They have a 3-point cushion on the Vegas Golden Knights, but they're going to run out of runway. They only have 6 games left.
Yep.
Vegas has 8 left. So, and Vegas is getting their guys back. Right, Mark Stone, they've got about 164 guys on LTIR, and you know, like Mark Stone's back now, they're figuring it out. Robin Lehner's in net. It gets harder for Vegas, it does. They got a back to back here. Well, I mean, 2 and 3, I think, with Calgary and Edmonton. And you look at the LA Kings schedule, they've got 6 games left. Every one of those games is against a team that's not in a playoff position right now. But the Kings are barely holding on to that playoff spot. Drew Doughty's done. We know that. I think the Kings run out of runway here. And if they drop out of third in the Pacific, they don't get a wild card over Nashville or Dallas. It's a tough stretch here. It's a tough slog here for the Kings with games that they could win. I mean, could you think of a worse back-to-back scenario? You win against Chicago and you're feeling good. And then you got to roll into Denver and play the Colorado Avalanche, who are rested, and they get dropped 9. They lose 9-3. Kings are in trouble, guys.
No, I agree. And the Doughty thing to me is huge because, I mean, for obvious reasons, I mean, this guy to me, you know, is en route to the Hall of Fame. And to lose somebody like that, like when you look at the Kings roster, there's a lot of young up and coming guys that you look at and you say, this is really, they're on the right track. And they're still led by the Kopitars and the Browns. And, you know, depending on, you know, which game it is, Quick sometimes. It's that intermediate, you know, they're either inexperienced or they're very, very experienced, but it's the middle guys. I just don't see the Kings having that much depth right now. And to lose, you know, I mean, there's no, they have some good guys up front, but is there anybody at this point in their career where you look at the Kings forwards and say, that guy scares me. Okay. We got to pay close attention to him. And with all, you know, all due respect to a guy like Kopitar, no, I do not see that. And to lose Doughty on the back end, I just think that, you know, with all due respect to how well they played, I just think that the ranks are thinning and they don't have enough to fill in the spots. You know, if they make it, I think it's going to be as much about the other teams behind them stumbling as it is the Kings earning that spot.
And if they make it, Daryl Sutter's prediction is going to come true, right? It's going to be a wasted week in hell, right? Because look, they're not very good right now.
No.
They have three 20-goal scorers. Mm-hmm. Victor Robertson has 20 goals to make the third guy. They can't score on demand, right? If they're going to get through this stretch, they need some big goals. Who's going to score them? Adrian Kempe? Put five guys on Adrian Kempe and let everybody else figure it out, right? They can't score on the power play. They're 28th. And they can't kill a penalty. They're 22nd. What are the three things that playoff teams do well? They score big goals. They score when they're given opportunities on the power play. They make the other team pay. And they don't give away goals when they're killing penalties.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kings do all three. And that's a really tough recipe to overcome. And then, you're right, they're playing for third in the Pacific. And so that matchup against Colorado would be avoided. But it's no picnic to walk into Edmonton. And the way that they can score, and how do you trade goals with them? Like, we've talked about not being able to win 5-4 games.
Yeah.
Edmonton can win by scoring five every night against LA because LA can't figure out the answer.
Yeah. No. Agree with you wholeheartedly. And I got to be honest. I mean, I like a lot of the things the Kings have done. But to me, going into this season, I thought that they were still like a year away from being in the playoffs or being a contender in that way. So I think they're a year ahead of schedule, but I think that reality is catching up to them. And unfortunately it's coming after 76 games with only six games remaining.
Yeah. And to that point, they are ahead of schedule. And in the, you know, as you look at a bigger picture view, you could probably, when you have time, if it does happen that they don't make it, right? Well, they're still in a driver's seat to do it, although they don't have the games in hand. The other teams do. But if they drop out, maybe you take a couple of weeks and you look at the big picture and you say, you know what? We are ahead of schedule. We were in a playoff race all the way to the end of April, and that's huge for this team. And there's a lot of young guys. But try telling that to them now, right? You know, that's the hard sell right now. You can't do that. So they're still in it. I get that. But let's look at the team that they could face right now. Is anybody sitting in a better spot than the Edmonton Oilers, you know, in terms of playoffs and needing to get out of the first round, needing to prove something? McDavid and Draisaitl, and they're looking across at the opponent that they could face right now as the LA Kings. And Sean, you just ran through the stats, a team that can't barely score three. All right. Edmonton's got to be feeling pretty good, and they've been playing very well too, by the way. How things have turned, right? I mean, we were talking a couple months ago about how the struggles of the Edmonton Oilers and, you know, the issues that they have and all the stuff that Ken Holland's going to have to address. And then they fired their coach and all that. And here they are, second in the division. I mean, they're only 2 points up on the Kings, but they got a bunch of games in hand too. And thinking to themselves, we just got to stay right where we are. And we're either going to get LA, who we know we can beat, or we're going to get Vegas, who's had to claw their way all the way through and might, you know, has had a bunch of injuries this season as well. And, you know, you question a little bit of health there and all that. I think Edmonton's in a position of all the teams right now. I think Edmonton might be in the best position of a play, you know, of a playoff team. Cause I mean, even think like Colorado, they're rolling everything. Colorado could face Dallas in the first round. Dallas is real tough, you know, Nashville the same way, but Edmonton's in a great spot.
And the thing, and Sean made a great point. I mean, look, you're going, say they play the Kings. And Sean pointed out how mediocre their penalty killing is. Anybody looked at what the Oilers trot out for a power play? Like, are we at the All-Star game or are we at a regular season game against Columbus? I mean, that would be very, very difficult. I mean, guys, to me, you know, when we talked about this a couple months ago, I still said, like, look, any team with McDavid and Draisaitl, I'm still going to – I still have faith in. But to me, and, you know, we're going full circle from how we started this podcast, it's going to come down to goaltending, to Sean's point. I mean, Mike Smith and Koskinen? I mean, if they play Vegas, you know, and China Doll goaltender – in Vegas, we all know who he is, can stay healthy. He's the type of guy that can win a series when you've got, you know, we saw it last year against Winnipeg in the first round when Hellebuck stood on his head. And, you know, Winnipeg just got better goaltending. That could happen just as easily with Vegas. But that Kings matchup, I mean, they have, you know, if I'm Edmonton, I'm drooling for that because there are so many. How many? Okay, if we're doing one of those matchup things that we do on NHL.com, and I would ask the listeners to, you know, check it out as the playoff, our playoff previews when they come along, and therefore you can ridicule me when for the things I don't get right, but. If we were when we're doing that and we're checking off the boxes for those for Kings Oilers series, where are you going to give the check mark to the Kings? Coaching, maybe,
yeah.
But that's after it. That, it's weighted heavy on the Edmonton side. So I agree with both of you. I mean, you know, if Edmonton sitting there is going, "Come on, LA, come on, let's make it in there, and we want to see you in the first round."
Because I believe that they don't want to see Vegas for all the reasons we talked about, the mystique that Vegas has. You know, they've gone deep in the playoffs every year. Lehner can do business when he's healthy. And then, like, you think about matchups and the Edmonton Oilers, like, their defense, not very good.
No.
Right? Darnell Nurse, very nice player. Very, very nice player. But how deep does a healthy Vegas Knights team go? They go three lines deep.
Yeah.
You start trotting out a third line that can score some goals against the third pairing in Edmonton. Oh, boy. They'll be turning those guys and going on a regular basis. And then you're like, oh, hey, look, there's Mike Smith and there's Mikko Koskinen. It's okay. We can let up eight breakaways. No, it's not. You can't let up eight breakaways a game against those guys. And that's the potential that Vegas has when they're healthy, is to exploit, is to kind of try and neutralize top six versus top six and say, okay, we're going to hang. We're going to trade goals. We're going to do whatever. And then bottom six, we're going to run you through the wall. And you can't answer with your bottom six forwards or your bottom two D. And that's where we're going to win a long series. We're just going to pummel you.
Do you remember last year, guys, when the Vegas played Colorado? And I forget what the score was in the opening game, but, I mean, the ice looked tilted like that. You know, Colorado looked like a rep team playing a house league team. That's how one-sided it was. And then, you know, Vegas kind of did exactly what Sean said, especially when the series went back to Vegas and they got the last change and had a chance to get the matchups that they wanted. And to Sean's point, again, like we talked about the Edmonton power play. So if Vegas gets their guys healthy, and I don't think that all of these guys have ever played on the power play together, but I'm just talking about in terms of skill. You could have Theodore, Pietrangelo, Pacioretty, Eichel, and Stone on your number one power play unit. What's not to like about that? You can trot those five guys out. They can have success against any penalty killing team in the National Hockey League. Again, it's all going to come down to health, but as you guys noted, Vegas is getting healthier at the right time.
They are. They are. And that's why I think they overtake LA, you know, with their games in hand, 3 points back. But I think they overtake LA. I think Vancouver's had a nice run to stay in it. I don't see them being able to overtake it. They're 6 points back with eight games left. That's going to be hard. As we were discussing this, though, I did have a question. It just popped into my head, off topic from Vegas and LA and whatnot. But The Colorado Avalanche are rolling. We know that they've won 7 games in a row as we're talking here. They're, you know, at 112 points, 53 wins, 29 home wins, both team records. You got Nashville and Dallas who are battling for those wild card one, wild card two spots. And Calgary's going to win the division in the Pacific. Who would you rather face, Colorado or Calgary, in the first round? And I don't think it's an obvious answer, to be honest with you. I don't think people will look at Colorado and say, well, you don't want any part of them. Look at them. They're rolling. What a season they've had. They've been incredible. Calgary's playoff tough, I think, you know? And they got a guy who behind their bench who knows how to win playoff tough hockey too. I don't think it's as obvious an answer that you want to face Calgary over Colorado. If you're like, if you're Dallas in that position and you're in, you know, wild card two, Nashville and wild card one, are you feeling better than Nashville?
I'm not sure which of those teams you would want to face. I do think this, I like Dallas. You know, any team that can trot out a Heiskanen, a Klingberg,
yeah,
and even at his advanced age, the Suter, there's a lot of depth back there. We've seen it's no longer the Jamie Benn show. It's no longer the Tyler Seguin show. They have new young up and coming, you know, so many layers to Dallas. Ottinger has had a hell of a year. The one thing about playing Calgary, if you're a finesse team, you're going to understand that when you go into the corners, it's going to hurt because that's the way Sutter teams play. It's going to hurt. And the interesting thing about the Calgary Flames, so when Daryl Sutter took over, I always like to use the term, he's a coach that knows how to take the air out of the puck. And that's what football people talk about, taking the air out of a football by when you have a lead, you run the ball and kill the last 11 minutes of the yep. game off the clock. Okay. Yep. Daryl Sutter knows how to do that. Okay. He can suck the entertainment value out of a game, but his team will win. He won't give you any scoring opportunities. And yet Johnny Gaudreau is having the best year of his career. He's over 100 points. Kachuk, there were rumors that he was going to be traded not so long ago. Remember those guys? Well, so much for that. He's having a career year. Mangiapane, Lindholm. So somehow Daryl Sutter has been able to, in Calgary, keep tighten up their defense, but allow their scorers to score and actually make them better offensively. So I think he's done a great job. So, I mean, given my druthers, I just wouldn't want to play Colorado because they're so skilled. But like I said, if you're going to play against Calgary, you better bring your lunch bucket because this is going to be a blue collar series. And like I said, it's going to hurt.
It amazes me that people have watched hockey for so long and don't understand that defense leads to offense.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody's like, oh, they're a good defensive team. They can't score goals. Some of the greatest offensive teams in the history of hockey were unbelievable defensive teams. Mm-hmm. The Montreal Canadiens under Jacques Lemaire, the New Jersey Devils under Jacques Lemaire, and early on when they were scoring 300 goals a year because they were transitioning from defense to offense.
Yep.
But to answer Dan's question, I'd want to play Calgary. And here's why. Because you got to win in the first round, right? You're looking at the playoffs and you're not looking to go in as cannon fodder. So you're like, I'm going to win the first round. A little easier to come out of Calgary side of the bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Than it is to come out of Colorado side. So you beat Colorado, you're like, oh, I'm feeling really good. Uh-oh. Here comes Minnesota. Here comes St. Louis.
Yeah.
I want to say one thing about Colorado, and I don't understand what this is about. And there was even talk at the trade deadline that they might go for a goalie. What is there about the way that Darcy Kemper has played this year that hasn't convinced people that this guy is a good goalie? I mean, I think he's a better goalie than Grubauer. I know Grubauer had a great year last year. But last I looked, you know, I think Kemper had 9 losses on the yep. season and is up near the top rankings of everything else. So when people start putting question marks around Darcy Kemper in Colorado and say, well, what's he won? Well, my response is, what have any of them won? They haven't been past the second round. You know, that's one thing that I find head scratching. I mean, when I look at the Colorado Avalanche, I am certainly not concerned about their goaltender. Yeah.
Look, he's 35-9-3 with a .926 save percentage and a
yeah, a lot to worry about.
Three and a 2.38 goals against average. Around the trade deadline, I was looking at those numbers, and they were kind of shocking to me that we were kept talking about their goaltending. And we did it here. You know, we did it on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And so to answer my question, I would rather play Calgary Tuchon for the simple fact of, like, I think Colorado, especially in round one, is going to just motor. They're just going to roll, you know. And then we'll see where it goes from there, because it's going to be a very hard round two as well for them. But I just wouldn't want any piece of a team that's rolling the way they're rolling right now. And I don't see it slowing down their goaltending. I don't see holes, right? No. I don't see any holes on that team. And I think a team like that, who has been around for a while in the playoffs, have been to the second round but haven't gotten past it, you know, they're one of those types of teams where you got to learn how to lose before you learn how to win, right? And especially if they get Landeskog back, I really – really like them. So I thought it's a good question, because you have they're two different types of teams.
Yes.
And Zyes, your point on Calgary is so well taken. Like, they've got guys who are having career years offensively, and Sean, like you said, I mean, good defense leads to good offense, but I just wouldn't want any part of the Colorado Avalanche in round one this year.
The concern with Darcy Kuemper, and I hate to disagree with you, Zyes, is he's played more than 50 games twice in his career. Played 55 once. He's played 51 this year. He's got to play 20. Best case scenario, Los Angeles Kings, 20 in a playoff run. He's probably got to play 24 minimum. 75 games on a body that's never, ever been able to finish a season. I'm a little nervous. Call me stupid, but I'm a little nervous about – and look – I'm a little nervous, but I'm not petrified, because I think Francois is a good goalie and he's getting healthy and he's shown the ability to step in. But, you know, to say, well, look at Darcy Kuemper's numbers and there's nothing to be nervous about. Look at that game played number. And there's a whole hell of a lot to be nervous about, especially when it's every second day for the next 2 months.
There's 18 days left to the playoffs. And if you know, Joe Sakic's a pretty smart dude, so I would suspect that this guy's going to get a lot of time off, you know, in the next 18 days before it starts, because the Avalanche really don't have that much to play for anymore. And I only disagree with you on one thing. I don't think you hate to disagree with myself or Dan. I think you love doing it, and that's what makes these things so fun.
That is very true. He does it with me all the time. Before we wrap it up here, a bunch of guys making debuts, right? And Zyes, you were there, I believe, for Owen Power's debut, which is the one that I want to talk about. He, the number one pick in the draft with the Sabres, comes in, plays almost 20 minutes against the Leafs. He's a +2, made a defensive play of the night, with the on the 2-on-1 with Giordano and Matthews. The way he cut off the pass, negated the opportunity for Austin Matthews to get the puck. The star of the night might not have been Owen Power. It might have been his grandmother, his 92-year-old grandmother's eyes. Just your thoughts on what you witnessed for the first of what will likely be many, many, many good nights for Owen Power.
Well, Dan, the one thing I noticed about him more than anything else was his composure. I mean, obviously, like we said, local kid from Mississauga, again, had more than 100 people there. 92-year-old grandma Yvonne was the highlight of the night. She had a certificate from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment for being at her first ever game. And she got to see her grandson win on that night. So that was great. But more than that, the moment didn't seem too big for Owen Power. He seemed to take it all in stride, even though he said after the game he was nervous when he saw Austin Matthews out there, because he's a big fan of Austin's. But can you imagine your third or fourth NHL shift and you see Mark Giordano, a former Norris Trophy winner, coming in on a 2-on-1 on you, flanked by Austin Matthews, who was the Maurice Richard Trophy winner last year, and you break up that 2-on-1 like it was a game of shinny at the local Mississauga rink? So that's when you kind of look and go, whoa, this kid's, you know, is far beyond his years. And I was really impressed. He was very efficient in his movement, and he said after the game, there were chances where he could go, but he's got to learn the landscape first before he pushes it. And I think guys, and I talked to Rasmus Dahlin about this. I think Rasmus Dahlin is one of the big things that's, or people in that dressing room that's going to help Owen Power, because we forget sometimes. I mean, Dahlin turned 22 yesterday. He's so young, and yet he's a previous first overall pick as well. So if Owen Power has any questions, and not just on the ice, but off the ice, about the spotlight of being a number one overall pick, Dahlin can help him. And you know what? I mean, when I watched Dahlin this year, and everybody knows, Paul Maurice once said that it takes about 170 games in the NHL for a defenseman to really feel comfortable. Dahlin has taken such a big step this year. And I think he's got the fact that you have two potential franchise defensemen on your blue line bodes well for moving forward.
See, and after disagreeing with his eyes, I'm going to compliment you, because I thought that was the perfect angle to take on that story. Because Rasmus Dahlin is the cautionary tale. You don't want Owen Power to live through what Rasmus Dahlin lived through. And he doesn't have to, A, because Rasmus Dahlin's there to maybe steer him past some of the potholes. He's going to hit some, because every player does. Maybe the Sabres are through the worst part of what they've had to go through. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about two franchise defensemen. You talk about an identity with this team. Maybe they finally found the coach that they need. You know, you don't want to put too much into what happened at the end of the season. The Buffalo Sabres have had their way with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Let's put it this way. We talked about the Toronto Maple Leafs and who they want to play in the playoffs. They don't want to play the Buffalo Sabres, so they're glad they're out. But, you know, Buffalo's made some really good teams look really bad late in the year, and that bodes well for next year. But they've done it before, so they have to show it. But I do think that Rasmus Dahlin is that cautionary tale that the Sabres can look at and say, we really need to protect this kid. They're young kids. They're fragile. They can't get their teeth kicked in all the time. They can't be minus all the time. Like, these things have a negative effect on these players for a long time. And Rasmus Dahlin, until this year, was lost. He was angry at times because of what was happening, like so many other players on the team. Now they know, and they know not to put Owen Power in these situations.
Yeah, no. And I think that they're a team to watch for. And I'll end with this on that subject. I think Don Granato is the first. I think he has done an outstanding job at teaching the young guys. I mean, look, Tage Thompson came into the season with 18 career goals. He's got 33. So that's what you want to see in a rebuild. You want to see guys get better. Dahlin is better. Tage Thompson is better. We can go down the list of players that are better. So I know the Sabres won't make the playoffs again, and that's a bitter pill to swallow for Sabres fans. Haven't seen that in over a decade. But when you've got two potential franchise defensemen on your blue line, let me put that into perspective for you. I just said that I think that Morgan Rielly might be the best Leaf defenseman since Boreas Salming. That's how long some teams go without having a stud on the blue line. So the fact that the Sabres potentially have two there bodes very well for the future.
Yeah, their future looks good, and our podcast is done. So we're going to wrap right there. Before we do close, though, we wanted to send our best wishes out to our podcasting partner. Darren Millard does the chirp. He was in an accident, but hopefully he is back chirping soon, and we wish him nothing but the best in his recovery. And for now, Zeiss, thanks for jumping on with us this week. Sean, we'll do it again next week. Enjoy the races. Enjoy the hockey.